VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. I do need to warn you, this is a very troubling issue we're going to be talking about today, but you must be aware of what's going on right here in our country. We have warned many times about the LGBT agenda. We've warned about the indoctrination that's taking place through media, children's cartoons and school textbooks, the classroom. We've talked about the intolerance of Christianity and how children would be victims of this movement. But today we're going to share with you an extremely troubling case of a father who is trying to protect his 7-year-old son from a so-called gender transition. And I put gender transition in quotes. Keep in mind that no matter what one does to their body, you cannot change from being an XX to an XY chromosome or from XY to XX. You're either male or female. Yet we have science deniers today who are rather confused by all of this. But again, I remind you, let's go back to Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 5, that God created male and female. And just in case you missed that point, in Matthew 19 verse 4, Jesus is speaking and said, "Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female?" But when we as a society continue to thumb our nose at God and we see the consequences unfold before us, such as a case as to what's going on in Dallas, Texas, where a father of a 7-year-old boy whose mother is trying to transition him into a girl has been fighting in court to save his son, and a jury has just ruled against the father. It's a matter which will impact this young boy for the rest of his life. It's a story that's going to have implications all across this nation. And friends, you need to hear the story today. You need to know what is going on. It's our privilege to have with us Madeline Jacob, a reporter for LifeSiteNews.com, who has been following this story, reporting on it. Madeline, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's tell the story of the father, Jeff Younger. He's been fighting not to lose custody of his twin boys, James and Jude. But unfold for us the scenario. Take us back to a point of beginning here in this story.
Of course. So James and Jude, let me step back, I guess, a moment. So Jeff and his, ex-wife, technically their marriage was annulled, started to go through divorce proceedings when the boys were around 3 years old, a little bit younger. And at one point, when Jeff was obviously no longer living in the same house as his boys, the boys came over to the apartment he was living in, and James, the twin who the mother's trying to transition into a girl, James had a rag over his head, and he was kind of playing, you know, with this rag over his head. He'd had it on his head for a few days, and Jeff asked this little 3-year-old, "Why are you, what are you doing with that rag on your head?" And James replied, "Mommy says I'm a girl." And Jeff has videotaped this. There's a video of this on the Save James website, a website that was created by some friends of Jeff to help support and bring publicity to this case. And that just really, of course, as anybody can imagine, shocked Jeff to his core. My son is telling me that his mother is telling him and trying to get him to be a girl. And in kindergarten, James was enrolled as a girl under the name Luna. So since kindergarten, all of his classmates, he's now in second grade, have known him as a girl. He goes to the girls' restroom. He lines up in the girls' line. And he's thought of as a girl. In fact, one of the contentions in this court case was over mom's concern that Jeff was going to embarrass James in front of his classmates by calling him James because his classmates think that he's a girl. And so that's kind of where this started. And throughout these divorce proceedings, James and requiring Jeff to affirm James or other similar requests have been a big part of these divorce proceedings. So technically, it's a custody battle. We were reminded during court, you know, this is a parenting and a custody battle. But really, at its core, it's so much bigger than that. It's about two parents who, you know, not only disagree on, but there's a lot of contention over their influence on this young 7-year-old's gender, quote-unquote, identity or quote-unquote expression.
Mm-hmm. So the mother then enrolled James as Luna in a school. Did the father, Jeff Younger, did he have any say in this at all?
No, he didn't have any say in where the boys were enrolled in school, the fact that James was enrolled as Luna. He received an email to the effect that, here's what's going to happen, your son now goes by the name of Luna. We found out in court that he actually had no say in, you know, picking the name. I mean, as you can imagine, picking the name, any influence or sway on any of that. He was just told via email, your son is, quote-unquote, is a girl in his brain and wants to go by the name Luna.
You know, I'm going to, and we're going to go further in the story here, but I found it interesting, some of the things I read in the coverage that you've had there at LifeSiteNews.com, that the mother said she believed it all began when James preferred a McDonald's girl toy over a boy toy?
Yeah, so the other day in court, she was asked about why she even started to think that James was a girl, and her initial response was, it started when he picked a small little coin purse that was black with a skull on it. Technically, it was a girl's coin purse at McDonald's over another boy's toy, which his twin brother, Jude, picked. And she said that started to get her wheels turning and thinking that something may be off and may be different. She later came back the next day and said, no, that wasn't the exact moment. It was later when he asked for a dress and then again insisted on getting a dress and finally a third time insisted on getting a dress and being able to wear it out in public when she really put all the pieces together and knew that something was different.
Yeah, and I've seen the video that was shot there, and little James is saying that his mother was even coloring his fingernails.
Yes, in fact, there are many pictures of James, not only with painted fingernails, but with makeup on, blush, lip gloss, I haven't seen them personally, but fake eyelashes. I know that was part of a statement that was mentioned in court. So it's not just painting fingernails. When James is dressed, one of the big things that I think is really important is he's very, I hesitate to say it, flamboyantly girl, right? Mm-hmm. He wore to the custody evaluators questioning and eval, he wore high heels and a very, you know, almost like a costume princess dress. He, you know, his mother puts fake eyelashes on him. What kind of a 7-year-old, even a girl, wears blush to school or to, you know, to meet with a psychologist? It's not just him affirming, her affirming James as a girl. It's above and beyond that, even.
Evidently, he had a coming out party on his 5th birthday, showing up in a dress.
Yes. So Jeff asked James about the rag one, and that was about three and a half. James was enrolled in preschool with Jude, his twin, as a boy. And so, it, you know, known as a boy, there are pictures of him as a boy. He wore the boy's uniform at his 5th grade party right before he started kindergarten that summer before, Mom had a quote-unquote coming out party. And if you speak with Mr. Younger, the father, he said James was wearing a dress but just terrified, very sad, kind of hid from the other kids at 5 at this birthday party that was supposed to be kind of his, as you said, coming out party for a 5-year-old.
And I understand that with school going on, that the mother actually filed a restraining order to prevent dad from picking up his sons from school?
Yes. So that was not part of this specific case, but okay. In previous proceedings, the mother had requested that dad not be allowed to pick the boys up from school or even to have contact with any of the other parents of the kids in James's class for fear that Mr. Younger would, quote-unquote, out James as a biological boy. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, the previous orders did not accept that, but the court did... they did rule that Mr. Younger had to affirm James or Luna, the name that his mother wants him to go by or has enrolled in school under. However, he's known. So technically he does have orders out that would state if kids know James is Luna, dad has to call James Luna. And this was kind of centered around a big incident that happened over an open house. So when the boys were in kindergarten, there was an open house that happened to fall during Mr. Younger's possession time. And he had already been denied possession in the past due to school events. Mom was really concerned about dad bringing the boys to school events because she knew that dad didn't affirm James as Luna. And so Jeff showed up and, you know, tried to get James to change into boy clothes and go to dinner with him. And there was a physical tug of war between the mother and the father over this poor, you know, kindergarten child.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from that incident that, you know, a handful of these orders and concerns came. But it's really at its core, it's the mother trying to prevent the school parents, even teachers. The original order asked that Mr. Younger not even be allowed to speak with teachers about the fact that James is a biological boy.
I understand that James was taken to a counselor. What can you tell us about it?
So he's been taken to multiple counselors. He currently has two counselors. Rebecca Orr is the original counselor that Dr. Georgelis, James's mother, started bringing James to. Dr. Georgelis found Rebecca through the Genesis Clinic. So the Genesis Clinic is a clinic here in Dallas that specializes in evaluations for medical transitions and the actual medical transition itself. And so Dr. Georgelis had reached out to them, said, you know, my son is, I think he's presenting as a girl, what should I do? They recommended Dr. Georgelis speak with Rebecca Auer. Now, Rebecca, the name of her counseling practice is Rainbow Counseling, and she told the court, and it's very common knowledge, that she works largely with the LGBT community, and she's very affirming of that ideology. And so she's diagnosed James with gender dysphoria. However, a big part of the court proceedings was actually looking at his records and pointing out that according to the DSM, James doesn't really qualify for gender dysphoria. He doesn't have the signature distress, psychological and emotional distress, that's required for gender dysphoria. But Rebecca Auer is the one who diagnosed him with that, who's been working with him to kind of, I guess, discuss his feelings and to just continue to affirm him in that ideology. He is also seeing another therapist who works with him, but Dr. Abel Tomatis, and Dr. Tomatis has not specifically diagnosed him with gender dysphoria, but he does agree with Rebecca Auer's diagnosis.
We're going to take a quick break here on Crosstalk, folks. We have a dad right now fighting to save his 7-year-old from so-called gender transitioning. We're going to continue to walk through this case because it went to trial this past week. Yesterday, the jury's decision was released. More into that in our next segment. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, was ancient man primitive?
Chris, in no sense was ancient man primitive. Man was created in the image of God with a large brain and great intellect, able at the very least to communicate with God in the Garden of Eden. Even in the early chapters of Genesis, man had agriculture, had metal workings, and he made musical instruments. Those civilizations of man that sprung up right after the flood were likewise quite intelligent. Think about it. Even the pyramids speak of an intelligent engineering ability of high quality, an ability which may have been lost up until recent times. There is no scientific evidence that man rose up from the animals. This is an evolutionary story which doesn't fit the facts. Mankind created intelligent at the start. Now that fits the facts, and that's the Back to Genesis truth.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America. Folks, the issue is going on right now in Dallas, Texas. That's where this issue has come to an head, where a dad is trying to save his seven-year-old from gender transitioning. We're talking with Madeline Jacob, a reporter for LifeSiteNews.com, who's been covering this story. And what's interesting, Madeline, as we were just discussing here, where's the media in all of this? So where are the major networks? I mean, this is a major story impacting our nation. I'm guessing the courtroom must be flooded with media. Is that the case?
I wish I could say that it was. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if the media is refusing to recognize the implications of this case, or, you know, what I presume is far more likely is just scared of even addressing this case for fear of being called hateful. But there were very few reporters in that courtroom. I think, unless there was someone I wasn't quite aware of, the Texan was there. I myself with LifeSite News was there. And then there was actually a Russian reporter there from the Russian Channel 1, who came down from D.C., and she actually came down because she had found out about this trial a couple of months prior and had done a story on it because she thought it was a hoax. Mm. She read about it and said, this cannot be true, and reached out to Jeff and said, you must be hoodwinking and duping people into trying to give you money, and I'm going to expose you, but realized or found out that this was actually a completely true story. And in speaking with her, she said that the original story, just on the kind of circumstances leading up to the trial, did superbly well in Russia because nobody could believe that this could happen in the United States. She said nothing like this could ever happen in Russia, but we really can't believe that it's happening in the U.S. in a place where freedom is so valued.
Folks, understand this thing. The story is unfolding in Dallas right now. The media totally absent, you know, except for LifeSiteNews.com and Russia media coming to cover this. And, mum's the word as far as other media. And we were just talking about James going to the counselor here, and I find it interesting, as in the story that I read, that the counselor put two sticky notes down on the desk. One had James on it. One had the fake girl's name of Luna. And the counselor said, what name do you want to be called? What happened?
James picked the one that said James. And the counselor, in her most recent testimony, said that he's now picking Luna far more frequently.
But
one of the things that hands down to me is just so concerning is every single witness, even the ones that were brought on by Dr. Georgelis, Rebecca Auer herself, Dr. Abel Tomatis, all the ones who have worked with James, all testified to the fact that his understanding of his gender is very, quote-unquote, fluid. He presents as both a boy and as a girl, and he's comfortable presenting as both. And yet, they're pushing for this presentation as a girl. Another thing that, again, Rebecca Auer, Dr. Tomatis, all witnesses, without question, did concede that the preferred, quote-unquote preferred, if it was possible, outcome for this was for James to desist, because living as a transgender individual would lead to a very difficult life. So, I mean, when even your expert witnesses who are paid by Dr. Georgelis, who's affirming the child, are admitting to these things, it really makes you scratch your head and wonder how a jury decided these boys shouldn't be put in their father's care.
Okay, now we've got to point out some things. You referred to the mother as Dr. Georgelis. Now, she is a pediatrician, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And she's been granted the sole right to manage the psychiatric and the psychological treatment of the twin boys.
Correct. She has to inform the father, but that's it.
Okay. And so we understand, though, that the father is the one being accused of child abuse by her for not treating James, a biological boy, like a girl.
Correct. She's accusing Mr. Younger of child abuse for not affirming James as a girl, Luna. And she's saying or telling the court that her argument is that James is too afraid to present as a girl with his dad. He wants to make his dad happy, and he's afraid of his dad because his dad is scary. of presenting as a girl at his house. However, something that Mr. Younger testified to in court, he said he used to let James wear girls' clothes and wear dresses initially. But one night, or one morning, he woke up and all of James's girls' clothes were in the trash can, in the garbage. And at that point, he said, you know, this is, that's it. You can choose, you can wear whatever clothes you want, but I'm not really going to go buy you girls' clothes, or I'm not going to keep girls' clothes here because you're clearly uncomfortable with them. And yet, Dr. Georgios is accusing him of the child abuse.
And a mother is also requesting limited consecutive overnight stays at the father's house?
Yeah, so in this petition, so what happened in court this week is Dr. Georgios filed a petition requesting a set of demands of Mr. Younger. So when Mr. Younger asked for a second opinion on James's diagnosis, Dr. Georgios filed this petition and asked that that Mr. Younger's consecutive nights with the boys be limited and that there be supervision when the boys are with him. The reason is she doesn't want James, quote-unquote Luna, in an unaffirming environment for too long. Go ahead, go to your dad's as a boy, and then you can come home and be safe with me. She's also asking that Jeff be required, by law, legally required, to not call his son, a biological boy, by his legal name of James. And is requesting that Jeff be forced to take classes on raising transgender children and do 2 years of mandatory counseling.
Mandatory, the father is the one that's needing counseling in all this. I mean, here we have a mother believing her son is a girl, and according to your story, the attorneys for the mother argue that the father, Younger, is insensitive, he's narcissistic, he's controlling and unstable. Figure that one out.
Yeah, you tell me. I'm just completely stunned, having sat in the courtroom for a week and listened to expert testimony from both sides. I don't understand how the jury came to this verdict.
Well, any testimony that comes to your mind that you found interesting? I know we've kind of talked about some that has come forth. I know James' kindergarten teacher testified.
Yeah, James' kindergarten teacher testified. She didn't really have a ton to say. She testified that he was a happy little boy, kind of things like that. It was very interesting that Dr. Georgios didn't have any character witnesses come forward, whereas Mr. Younger had only two of them got to testify, but he had four or five people lined up as character witnesses. So I really found that to be fascinating. But I think the expert witnesses, the pediatric endocrinologist, the psychologist who came and testified, one of the big things that stuck out to me was the stark contrast between Dr. Georgios' expert witnesses and Mr. Younger's expert witnesses. So Dr. Daniel Schumer, he's a pediatric endocrinologist. I believe he's at the University of Michigan now. He testified to the fact that the side effects of cross-sex hormone therapy are no worse than the side effects of normal puberty for an individual of that sex. So to kind of clarify, because my brain can't wrap its head around it despite having sat in court for a week having to listen to this, if you think you're a girl, like, you know, Dr. Georgios says James thinks he is, and he starts taking estrogen to affirm, you know, validate, whatever you want to call it, his feeling that he's a female, the risks of that are equivalent to a young girl going through puberty, just female going through puberty, which we later heard, and if you, you know, do even a little bit of digging, there's very little actual research into the long-term side effects of any of these cross-sex hormone therapy. Puberty blockers aren't even supposed to be used for transgender kids. That's an off-label use. And later in the trial, we heard from other expert witnesses who testified to just the really scary side effects: permanent sterility, decreased life expectancy, heart attacks, heart disease. All of these just insane side effects, which were completely denied by Dr. Schumer. So I think that it was really interesting to hear from these witnesses. Another very important piece that I think everybody needs to know about is that roughly 85% of children who have some sort of gender identity crisis or issue or gender dysphoria, 85% of children who have that issue before puberty or before adolescence will return to identifying with their gender that matches with their biological sex after adolescence, after puberty. Okay, 85%.
Wow, yeah.
But for those children that are affirmed, it becomes more likely, socially affirmed. So social affirmation would be like what's happening with James. He's being treated as a girl socially. He's not physically or medically being treated as a girl, but he's socially being treated as a girl. And children that are socially affirmed, it flips, and it becomes far more likely that those children persist or they continue to identify with the opposite gender, and they seek puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones in far higher percentages than these children who are just allowed to. It's called the wait-and-see approach. Mm-hmm. And the wait-and-see approach does not mean ignoring your child, telling them, no, you're not a girl. The wait-and-see approach actually validates the child's feelings without allowing them to socially present as the opposite gender. And so I think that just kind of the collection of the side effects and the serious risks to something like this, contrasted with the benefit of and the statistical data that shows that the wait-and-see approach is far more beneficial, or if nothing else, it's really not harmful.
You know, I find it interesting that the mother here can use her abilities to convince James that he's a girl, but the court has forbidden Mr. Younger from convincing his son that he's a boy.
Yes. So, and that's a big contention. So I've met with Jeff on multiple occasions, and one of his, you know, what flabbergasts him so much is it's completely unconstitutional. He's forbidden to teach his religious beliefs, moral beliefs, biblical beliefs to his boys. And that's completely unconstitutional. He's not allowed to speak about gender or discuss gender, James's gender, try and talk to James about gender at all. Period, end of discussion. If he does that, he could get thrown in jail.
Oh, my. So we have a local pastor speaking, Pastor Stephen Broden. What is his connection to all of this?
Mr. Broden's a well-known activist here in Dallas. He was really calling on the Texas legislators to pass legislation preventing children under 18, so children, from being treated with puberty blockers or cross-sex hormone therapy. And the reason we can all see this is children don't understand the side effects of this decision. And mm-hmm. really, it's their parents ultimately kind of making this decision if they start this life-changing course before they're 18.
Yeah.
So that was kind of his involvement in what was going on.
We're going to take a quick break here, folks. We've got a little bit more in this story that we'd like to share before we open some phone lines as well. And just earlier this morning as well, I just watched a video clip of a 60 Minutes from, it was outside the country, of a young person who had started the gender transitioning, now regretting it, and now having to do some reversal in surgery. Folks, it's preposterous. This is a 7-year-old boy. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Did you know that the first act of Congress was to open with prayer? Or that the Declaration of Independence mentions God 4 times? Or that George Washington's first order to his troops was to live and act as becomes a Christian soldier? Did you know that in 1642, Harvard University stated every student is earnestly pressed to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life? Or that Noah Webster said education is useless without the Bible? These and over 2,000 other quotations revealing the godly heritage of America are found in America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations by William Federer. This reference volume of over 800 pages cites founding fathers, presidents, statesmen, constitutions, and court decisions. An excellent reference guide to know our heritage, and it's available for a donation of $22. Call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. No, friends, you're not going to see this story in nightly news, but it is happening right now in Dallas, Texas. And when we see the desire to put 7-year-old James on puberty blockers, and there is a matter of fact, LifeSiteNews.com carried the story that, according to the story, Mayo Clinic shared the side effects of this feminizing hormone therapy. Some of those side effects: a blood clot in a deep vein, that's deep vein thrombosis, or a lung pulmonary embolism, high triglycerides, gallstones, elevated liver function test, infertility, high potassium, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and other matters. You know, this is so concerning, yet it is the father who is being challenged in all of this, Mr. Younger. And I find it very interesting is that story came out here just recently, too, that James, the boy here, is not the biological son of Dr. Georgelis?
Georgelis, yes, Dr. Georgelis. No, it came out during testimony that the two boys who are twins were, I guess, the product, so to speak, of in vitro fertilization. Hmm. And both Dr. Georgelis and Mr. Younger selected the egg donors, and then they are, of course, biologically related to Mr. Younger. And they got to actually pick the sex of the boys as well.
This story is troubling. It's gone to the jury yesterday. Tell us about what happened.
Yeah, so I'm going to step back just very quickly.
Sure.
Because of how this court case worked, Dr. Georgelis brought a petition to the court. Mr. Younger filed a counter petition, and he requested a jury trial because the judge that's presiding over this ruling has presided over previous divorce orders for Dr. Georgelis and Mr. Younger. Mr. Younger wasn't confident that he'd get a positive ruling from her based on some previous rulings and bias that he sees in her, and so he asked for a jury trial. So the jury yesterday, after hearing a week of testimony, got to rule on just Mr. Younger's side of the case. It's a little different that they didn't get to kind of rule on both sets of requests, but Dr. Georgelis didn't request a jury trial, so the jury didn't rule on her request. So what they were given were two questions. The first question was, one, do you believe that the current ruling of joint managing conservators, technically right now or prior to yesterday's ruling, Mr. Younger and Dr. Georgelis were considered joint managing conservators, even though Dr. Georgelis had complete authority over psychological and psychiatric decision making. So do you think that the joint managing conservatorship should be maintained, or should someone be given sole managing conservatorship? If yes to number one, should Mr. Younger be given sole managing conservatorship? And the jury came back after about an hour and a half of deliberation and said, yes, we believe that the current order should be changed from joint managing conservatorship to sole managing conservatorship. But no, Mr. Younger should not be the sole managing conservator of these boys.
Oh, my.
It was, I mean, I was sitting there in the courtroom, and you could feel everybody's heart just drop when that second question was answered. Because the courtroom, you know, there were between anywhere from 10 to about 20, 25 people, depending on the day, there to support Mr. Younger. And when we got that verdict back, it was just heartbreaking.
So what happens next?
So now the judge will take into consideration, she's technically right now writing her ruling. She takes into consideration the jury's verdict and what they've kind of passed along to her, their thoughts or recommendations, and she will create the final ruling. Because, for example, juries don't really rule on the exact possession schedule or child support or things like that. It's kind of a little bit too detailed for them. So the judge will rule on that, and she'll also rule on Dr. Georgelis' petitions and requests, the ones that I mentioned earlier, forcing Jeff to not call his son by his legal and given name, James Younger, forcing him to call this boy Luna, forcing Jeff to take transgender classes, forcing him to undergo counseling, and also forcing Jeff to not keep company with people who don't affirm James as quote-unquote Luna.
Oh, my. Isn't this a violation of his religious rights, his moral objections to this?
Yes, it completely is. And yet the court has already shown that they show very little concern for his religious or moral objections by ruling that he's not allowed to speak with either of his two twin boys about gender or biological sex. They've already squashed his right to religion, his moral objections.
Now, the judge is going to be rendering her decision. This is tomorrow, correct?
Yes, tomorrow afternoon at 1:30, she will read her decision to the court.
We understand this is causing some trouble for Jude. Isn't he kind of struggling to understand how his brother can be a girl? I mean, his brother is really, what, his sister?
Yeah, and this is something when I spoke with Mr. Younger initially that came up, and one of the stories that Mr. Younger told me was Jude doesn't understand what reality is anymore because he knows he's lying somewhere. He said to Dad one day, the boys had gone and played outside, and they were all dirty, you know, getting all rough and muddy like boys do, and they had come inside to shower, and Jude looked down and pointed to James, and specifically his genitalia, and said, how can he be a boy if he has, you know, male genitalia?
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff said, you know, son, I can't tell you. I'm legally bound by the court. I can't talk about it.
Wow. Folks, tomorrow afternoon, and I believe that's at 1:30 Central Time in Dallas?
Yes, that is correct.
1:30 tomorrow afternoon, the judge is going to be rendering her decision. She's preparing it here today. And we're certainly asking that you be in prayer regarding this situation. But, friends, I'd like to open the phone lines here today and get your reaction to what is taking place. Maybe there is a question you have pertaining to it. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. 800-733-9829. A dad who is trying to save his 7-year-old from gender transitioning ruled against yesterday by a jury for his decision-making authority in that regard, and the jury's decision that custody ought to go to the mother in this particular case. We understand it is the father who is said to be causing child abuse here in this situation because he's not treating James like a girl. And, we've had people on this program before, Madeline, like Dr. Michelle Critella, who has said just the opposite, mm-hmm. to affirm somebody's gender dysphoria as being reality. She said that's child abuse.
And it's so true. There are many voices. There's research out there that validates that exactly. And yet you don't hear about it. It's swept completely under the rug because we have to be, quote-unquote, politically correct. These big organizations, we have to be politically correct and inclusive. We can't be hateful.
Friends, you understand where we are in our society today? What's going on through the auspices of the drag queen story hours and the rewriting of textbooks, and we have these gay history months, and we have states now that mandate that we teach the positive contributions of LGBT individuals in our nation's history and so forth. You understand where this is all heading? And you understand what has brought us to cases just like this that are going on in Dallas, Texas? I mean, it is preposterous to know that a dad right now is it appears is going to be having to affirm his son as being a girl, that he will be forbidden to call him as James but must refer to him as Luna, that he himself may have to go in for counseling, and he himself may have to take a class on transgenderism. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Let's go to Salina, Kansas. Steve, you're on the air.
You know, Jim, when I first heard of this, it was months ago, I started praying for this. But, yeah. You know, just calling in and hearing the testimony, I had to breathe deep and take a prayer even to try to complete this phone call. Because can you imagine, and anyone listening, if this was us that had to go through this? You know, I'm praying for this man that even keeps his sanity because the guest said, can I wrap her mind around it? I can't either. It's truly that she's been turned over to Satan, the mother. And I pray, I know we're supposed to pray for our enemy, But, you know, I'm getting to the point, Jim, I'd pray for him, but I have to really ask God to help me through that. But the main thing is, folks, we need to pray for this man that he keeps his sanity and he keeps his faith strong to this.
Thank you, Steve. And indeed, pray that truth would prevail. I mean, again, as I quoted from the very beginning, you're either XX or XY, you're male or female, and this gender confusion that's gone on through classrooms and programs and everything else, we're starting to reap what we sow here, Madeline.
We really are. And I think what's really scary about this case is it's about a child.
Yes.
Right? We are forcing this disordered gender expression on a 7-year-old boy. He, even if with a shortened life expectancy that's shown in transgender individuals, he could live with this decision made by his mother for 60, 70 years. And it's a life of psychological problems. The transgender population is considered an at-risk population by the medical community.
Let's go to Brad in West Dallas, Wisconsin. Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. Boy, is this child abuse. I think the first thing that really sticks out like a sore thumb is the fact that when his dad asked about him with the rag on his head, he says, "Mom says I'm a girl." He didn't say, "I'm a girl." He didn't say, "I feel like a girl." He said, "Mom told me I'm a girl." And that's why this is going on. Now, your guest mentioned something about the mother being LGBT friendly, and I'm wondering if she's a lesbian.
But this would be the counselor that the mother took the child to. Is that correct, Madeline?
Yes, that's correct. I do know, we don't know anything about the mom's kind of sexual orientation, but she has taken James to a pride parade. She's hung a transgender flag in his room. So she is definitely, and even one of the custody evaluator testified that, you know, she may be encouraging this, quote unquote, a little more than she should be.
Your guest also mentioned that they were in the shower together and the other boy came out and said something about, and what you said was, how can he be a boy if there's nothing there? Is that what happened? They've already done surgery on him?
No,
how can he be a girl?
A girl. There was a misspeak.
They share the same genitalia.
Oh, okay, so he's got the same thing I've got, so how can he? Why is he not a boy?
Yeah.
That's what he's saying, right?
They're twins.
Yep, they're twins.
They're fraternal twins, but they're twins. And so Jude, you know, here's his, quote-unquote, you know, his sister, but it's his twin at the same time.
Yeah.
Could you imagine trying to wrap your head around that as a
7-year-old? Unbelievable.
Yeah. I can't wrap my head around it as an adult.
Brad, thank you for the call here. And again, folks, the judge is going to be giving her decision tomorrow afternoon, 1:30 Central Time. And be in prayer. Be in prayer that eyes would be open to the truth in all of this. All the major players here in this case, including that of the judge. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back to more of your phone calls. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. And our guest today is Madeline Jacob. By the way, her stories, and you can follow her stories, they're at LifeSiteNews.com. LifeSiteNews.com. You'll see the stories here pertaining to the matter. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. In 1948, John Rawlings Rees and G. Brock Chisholm founded the World Federation of Mental Health. They had many goals, but one of them was to destroy traditional values. In fact, make them a sign of mental illness, parental authority. They also wanted to destroy the free market system and declared that if you were defending your private property, it was a sign of your being neurotic. In fact, my friend John Stormer, who wrote the book None Dare Call It Treason, said this: "Few legislators who passed the model mental health laws realized that Chisholm and that of his associates defined mental illness as a sense of loyalty to a particular nation, a sense of loyalty to a moral code, a strict adherence to the concepts of right and wrong, and opposition to foreign aid or communism," end quote. Does that not sound familiar? If you defend our borders and national sovereignty and national security and oppose socialism and social justice, you're deemed mentally ill, a bigot, a hater. Where does this come from? World Federation of Mental Health.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Can you put yourself into this position right now of the father and what's going on in this court case? Jury ruling yesterday and ruling against the father, and now the judge giving her a court-ordered decision tomorrow afternoon. Right back to the phone. By the way, we're talking with Madeline Jacob, reporter for LifeSiteNews.com. They have been covering the story for some time, absent other media in the courtroom. Lawrence is calling from Black River Falls, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Lawrence.
Yeah, first, I'm wondering, the child was evaluated. Was the mother ever evaluated?
No. It was requested by the father that both he and the mother be evaluated, but the evaluator refused.
Yeah, I believe the mother should be evaluated, too, see if she's sane enough to raise the children. Hmm. And another thing is, where's the child advocates for the state with this going on?
There was an amicus attorney present at the trial who was theoretically arguing as a neutral third party for the boys. However, he was definitely not on Mr. Younger's side.
Thank you for the call here, Lawrence. We're going to Tricia in Adams, Minnesota. You're on the air, Tricia.
Hi, I'm just wondering if the father in this case has any chance of appeal to a higher or a different court.
Good question.
That's a great question, Tricia. Theoretically, yes, but it's very difficult to appeal and overturn a jury ruling. So at this point in time, having spoken with Mr. Younger's lawyers and with Mr. Younger, it doesn't look like that's actually a real possibility.
Thank you, Tricia. Our number is 800-733-9829. Let's go to a caller in Florida. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I would like to know the father's profession.
He has a background in computers and mathematics. He's done a lot of freelancing, or I wouldn't call it freelancing, but big contract work for places like banks, setting up computer and math systems.
So he has no psychological background, psychiatric. He's not a psychiatrist.
No, he's not a psychiatrist, neither is the mother. Thank you. Let's go to Abigail in Wisconsin Dells. You're on the air, Abigail.
Hi. You know, I hear this a lot, about the gay and the lesbian, but until you actually know somebody that's part of this, it doesn't really hit you in the face. And my brother was just talking to us on Sunday, and he said that a little boy that we know that's been coming to our church told him that he thought he was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it just came in my face, and I just can't believe that. And it's just so hard that everybody is losing their freedom. Like, this man is now not allowed to even speak to his son about this.
Yeah. Thank you, Abigail, for the call. And I really see this, Madeline, where we are bearing fruit from the harvest. I mean, we're harvesting fruit that has been planted here, and we've been implanting in young people's minds from preschool on up this whole matter of questioning if you're male or female, the drag queen story hours, the specials that have been on TV for young people. And now we're reaping the fruit, or the beginning to reap the fruit of that.
It's only going to get worse from here.
Yeah. Let's go to James, who's calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. James, you're on the air.
Yes, I listened to you, and I'm very pleased to be hearing all this stuff, because I didn't know that you guys were on for, like, so many years. But, you know, I wonder if the woman, the mother, actually wanted a girl and didn't get a girl, and God blessed her with two boys, and she's mad at God.
You know, that's a great question. I know that she does have two older girls as well. So I couldn't answer it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, James. Alan in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yeah. I need to ask this question of your guest. What, if any, would there have been some kind of jury selection process? I was a juror a couple of times. I went through this once, okay. Interviewed by the lawyers involved.
Okay, before we talk about your case, Alan, let's find out about the jury selection here for this particular case. Madeline?
Yeah, so they took about a half day to pick the jury. Each side gets six people that they can, what's called, strike. No, not this person. They get to review kind of a questionnaire that they filled out, and then based on this questionnaire, the judge's ruling and who they've stricken, they pick the jury from there.
Okay, thank you, Alan, for the question here as it relates to this matter. Jury came back in favor of denying the father's request and denying authority for the father to have that, that be the decision maker in this regard. I know another area that you're greatly concerned about in all of this that should be a concern to us as well, Madeline, is the whole aspect of government's control over religious rights.
Exactly, exactly, Jim. I think it's huge. In this case, they've preferenced a disordered gender expression, and they've completely shut down, ignored, and silenced the religious objections of this man. And if, I mean, this case could set a terrible precedent for the government to continue to silence our religious freedom in response to the LGBT community. You know, not to mention the parental rights issues. If I object to my kid presenting as trans or LGBT, I could have them taken away from me solely because of my own religious objections and my religious freedom.
Let's squeeze one last call in. This is Faith in Milwaukee. You're on the air.
I just wanted to offer a suggestion in regard to the jury. I think that there is the possibility that a seed juror was planted by the woman's side, if you will. And because that happened to me when I was serving.
Okay, thank you, Faith. We don't have any evidence of that, Madeline, do we?
No, we don't have any evidence of any seated or jury tampering.
Okay. Thank you, Madeline, for the call, or Faith, for the call. Madeline Jacob, our guest here today, and you can read the stories at lifesitenews.com. It's a very troubling account that's taking place. Media is just absent from the courtroom. Print media, for the most part, and broadcast media are absent from there. They have it at lifesitenews.com. Madeline, thank you so much for covering the story and for really bringing it to the attention of our Crosstalk listeners today.
Thank you so much, Jim, for having me. And I just ask all your listeners to pray for the family and for the father.
Great. And stay on the line here for a moment, if you would. Folks, I just want to echo that as well, to be praying for this situation. Be praying for the judge as that opinion is being written out today, her order that's going to be presented tomorrow afternoon. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.